Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, all brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. And right now, for just $5, you can get the new Dollar Shave Club starter set with free shipping, dollarshaveclub.com/martini. A little bit more on that later in the podcast. Jim, we've got some Senate races coming fuller into view now as we get further and further into 2018. We have Mitt Romney launching his video today for his Utah Senate bid. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the week and how it's pretty much a foregone conclusion as long as he maintains a pulse over the next several months that he'll probably be the next senator from Utah. We also have a reconsideration in North Dakota. It's also the year for reconsiderations, apparently, if in fact Corker is seriously thinking about not retiring. But in January, the only congressman in North Dakota, Republican Kevin Cramer, announced he was not going to challenge Democrat Heidi Heitkamp in the Senate race this year. But it sounds like the arm twisting has gotten to him from President Trump, Mitch McConnell, and others. Here's what The Hill says. North Dakota Congressman Kevin Cramer will announce at a Friday rally that he's running for the Senate, giving Republicans a high-profile candidate to challenge Senator Heidi Heitkamp. The Associated Press confirmed with a source close to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who was heavily recruiting Cramer to run, that the at-large congressman will jump into the race. Cramer's reversal comes after initially passing on a Senate bid last month. A Facebook page labeled Kevin Cramer for U.S. Senate posted that Cramer will make the announcement at a hotel in Bismarck Friday night. His candidacy will give Republicans a decent shot at knocking off Heitkamp, who's running for her second term. Republicans see North Dakota as a prime opportunity to pick up a Senate seat and boost their slim majority. President Trump won North Dakota by 36 points in 2016. So, Jim, I realize a lot of folks don't know much about Kevin Cramer. I didn't know much about Kevin Cramer, and I probably still don't. His American Conservative Union rating is at 70. His Heritage Action rating is at 48. So he's not exactly a rock-rib conservative, perhaps, on every issue. But Heidi Heitkamp's at 14% in both of those surveys. And so that means that not only would we get a more reliable vote from North Dakota, obviously strengthening the majority would be very helpful as well.
Yeah, worth remembering in these sorts of situations is when you've got the chance to elect somebody of your party who doesn't line up the way you want on every single issue, they still vote for who the majority leader is. It's a very similar phenomenon in the House where you're voting for Speaker. This means, you know, majority leader would remain to be Mitch McConnell or some other Republican if at some point someone decided to challenge him. And this means the Republicans would keep all the committee chairmanships, which means they would have a heck of a lot more control over what comes to the floor and what legislation ultimately gets passed. So given a choice between being in the majority and being in the minority, you want to be in the majority. And even if you have to accept somebody who isn't exactly as you'd like on every issue, usually it's worth it. And it also is worth noting, I mean, Heidi Heitkamp gets portrayed as one of the quote-unquote centrist Democrats or moderate Democrats or red, you know, she is literally a red state Democrat. You know, North Dakota is a state Republicans have done quite well in most statewide offices. And it's worth noting that Kevin Cramer, as the lone House of Representatives, he is a statewide official, right? There's only one House district in this state. He won a heck of a lot of votes more than Heitkamp did back in 2012. So he should be well positioned for this. Certainly name ID is high. People have, you know, been voting for him for quite some time. The general, you know, Republican lean of the state should work well for him. And as you've noted, Heidi Heitkamp, a bunch of these Senate Democrats that are from red states, the Joe Manchins of the world. I'm sure there are some Democrats who will object to this, but basically they do a nice job of wanting to look like they want to vote with Republicans or appear bipartisan. And then at the last second, they just can't quite get themselves there. They can't quite vote for tax reform. Can't quite vote for the efforts to change, to repeal or replace Obamacare. They're just never quite, you know, yes, you know, they did vote for a couple of the Trump cabinet appointments and things like that. But by and large, red state Democrats are voting with their party a majority of the time and not really mitigating the leftward drift of their party in any significant way. So Republicans feeling much better about this state. We talked a little bit about Tennessee earlier in the year. Also kind of interesting, there's a report going around that Ann Wagner, Republican lawmaker who the state party had wanted to run against Claire McCaskill, some state officials saying she may be reconsidering it too. So I don't know whether this is a broad sign Republicans don't think the midterms will be so bad, or whether the Republican National Republican Senatorial Committee is just really leaning on people and either promising them unbelievable levels of financial support, or maybe they're waking up with horses' heads in their bed, Greg. I don't know how they're doing it. But for some reason, Republicans are changing their mind, and that's probably a good sign for the party.
Well, it probably is, because you look at both of those situations with Missouri and North Dakota. Those are two races Republicans absolutely should have won in 2012. They should be have incumbents right now with Todd Akin and Rick Berg, but both of those guys let those races get away when they were absolutely winnable for very different reasons, obviously. But, Jim, let's move to our bad martini now, and you have written about this extensively in today's Morning Jolt. If you check out Jim's Twitter feed, at Jim Garrity, he brings up a lot of different points in different posts there as well. And essentially, Jim, your point is that if we're going to have a serious conversation, quote-unquote, or a national conversation about guns, then you have to understand what the heck we're talking about. And there's a number of different ways that this has come up in a frustrating manner over the past couple days since the horrific shootings at the Florida high school that left 17 dead. First, here's a clip from CNN. This is Allison Camerota talking with David Hogg, a student from the high school who you've probably seen on TV quite a bit. And here was his message to the politicians.
You have a message for Congress, for the president.
Yeah. My message to lawmakers in Congress is please take action. Ideas are great. Ideas are wonderful and they help you get reelected and everything. But what's more important is actual action and pertinent action that results in saving thousands of children's lives. Please take action.
Do you have a sense of what kind of action that would be?
Any action at this point, instead of just complete stagnancy and blaming the other side of the political aisle, would be a step in the right direction. And working together to save these children's lives is what this country needs.
And Jim, we don't want to be too tough on him. He's a young kid. And he's obviously been through a very traumatic situation, but he's in the same place a lot of people are. They feel like something ought to be done, but they're not sure what. And so it's hard to hold people responsible for not doing something when you don't know what it is exactly that you want them to do. This morning, he was back on CNN talking with Allison Camerota, saying if people think mental health is the way to go, let's do that. If you think gun control is the way to go, let's do that. Still very general. On your Twitter feed, you reacted to the actor Matthew Modine, who said that most of these mass shootings are caused by automatic assault weapons, which is clearly not the case. And my favorite example of ignorance is when the political consultant Rick Wilson tweeted an entirely unrelated item about people in Florida being more in danger of opioid overdoses than MS-13, the gang of folks here illegally, for the most part, from El Salvador. Stephen King wrote, "Oh, yeah, well, tell that to the kids at the high school." Obviously confusing MS-13 with an AR-15. So, Jim, if we're going to have this conversation, a lot more education has to happen.
You know, Greg, it's strange and unnerving to think that Stephen King can't really keep track of scary stuff. You kind of figure that'd be in his wheelhouse. Look, every time there's a mass shooting like this, we see these, you know, extraordinarily earnest, serious editorials. It's time for a national conversation about guns. Now, somebody like me would argue, well, actually, we've had that conversation about guns over and over and over again. You just don't like the conclusions we come to in this national conversation about guns. It really seems to be like when you say we need a national conversation about guns, what you really mean is we want you to pass gun control laws and you're not doing it. So we're going to have this conversation again under the expectation that you will. Now, as many folks have pointed out, Democrats had the opportunity to pass gun control laws back when they had majorities in 2009, 2010. They chose not to. It's worth remembering that there are quite a few pro-gun Democrats, the Jim Webbs, the Heath Schulers of the world, who would not have supported any of these things. But even beyond that, I get frustrated by this importance that, you know, everyone's insisting we need a conversation. I'm happy to have this conversation. I would like those who are on the other side of this issue from me to do a little bit of homework, because it's very tough to discuss policy solutions with people who don't know what the current policies are. I can't believe CNN did not delete this tweet. They put out this comment, you know, in Florida, you don't need a permit for a concealed carry for a rifle or shotgun. Now, you don't have to be a gun guy or you know, really. If you've watched any action movie, you know that the guys don't, you know, unless you've got like a really long trench coat or something like that, you can't conceal a shotgun. You can't conceal an AR-15. They're big. They take two hands, right? The last time I was at the range, I had this fascinating experience. Revolvers require two hands in most cases. You're not all this stuff where you see guys in action movies shooting them left and right. No. It's not, you know, it's just not realistic. And my sneaking suspicion is that what most people know about guns comes from Hollywood. It does not come from reality. It does not come from firsthand experience. And so you end up with these comments where all people referring, we need to ban automatic weapons. We have. Automatic weapons are illegal. Here's where you put in the asterisk. Exceptionally small amount were grandfathered when they changed the law back in 1983. No automatic weapon. I think a grand total of three have been used in any crime since the official ban went through. Semi-automatics are legal. That is what has occurred and been used in some of these crimes. But it's like one of those things like when people they use the term assault weapon, and yet they don't really define what an assault weapon is. Usually what it means is it is scary looking, right? It looks like a weapon that the military uses rather than actually that. Now, as my colleague Kevin Williamson has pointed out, if you want to kill someone, right, if you actually want sheer propulsive power of a projectile, a hunting rifle will do that. Hunting rifles are designed to take down elk and deer and these powerful things and stuff like that. They're way more powerful than handguns are. But for some reason, hunting rifles are not seen as dangerous. So what the contention is that a lot of these arguments really come down to aesthetics. That gun looks scary. Ergo, I believe it should not be banned, or I believe it should not be legal. As I continue to go off on my rant, I observe like the gun show loophole. Not a single mass shooter has ever purchased their gun at a gun show, right? And yet it keeps getting brought up and it gets used in ads and things like that. And it just seems like we're not looking for a solution that actually addresses mass shooters. We just have these gun laws lying around and they get used. And I think the example that struck me as this is phenomenally egregious, and I cannot believe that this didn't get – well, I can believe this didn't cause more grief for the speaker. President Obama, after one of the mass shootings, said, you know, it's easier for a teenager to buy a Glock than to buy a computer or a book. That's just nonsense, right? I'd be like, first of all, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, right? I mean, they're all over the place, right? You can buy those things. It might be expensive. When you purchase a gun, you have to go to a federally licensed firearms dealer. They have to plug your name into the instant check system. They have to see if you have a criminal record. Do you have anything indicating you have a situation where you've been ruled not legally permitted to own a firearm or something like that? That's what happens for everybody. If you're under 18, if you're a kid, you cannot purchase firearms in any state of this country. There are certain situations where you're allowed to own a gun, you know, fathers and sons go out hunting or something like that. But no, it is not easier for this stuff. And so when like people say these things that just flat out aren't true, look, if you want to have this national conversation, treat me with respect and actually look into what you want to talk about instead of just emoting at the cameras and stuff. So anyway, deeply frustrating, Greg, and there's no indication that a lot of folks in our national conversation want to actually do that research and actually do that and actually get to understand the actual laws. They just want to emote for the cameras and demonize their political opponents.
Jim, let's have a conversation about something else, and that's the best way to get yourself ready in the morning, whether you're shaving, whether you're showering, whatever you're doing to get yourself prepared and looking good and smelling good in the morning. Dollar Shave Club is the way to go. Dollar Shave Club, just by the title alone, is going to tell you that you can get great shaving products. Obviously, the razors, and they replace those every month. And you get the Dr. Carver shave butter and all sorts of other things. But Dollar Shave Club is a lot more than just shaving. And as we've discussed many times on here, Dollar Shave Club is better than shopping in a store because you can just click it on your computer and it's sent to you. You don't have to actually go there. So DollarShaveClub.com is where you want to go. They deliver everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best.
Yeah, they've got shampoo, they've got body wash, they've got toothpaste, and of course, the best razors I've ever used. I get an amazing high-quality shave every morning from my Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor. And the true gold standard of any morning routine is Dr. Carver's Shave Butter. It helps the razor gently glide across your skin, and it gives you a satisfying shave every single time.
Dollar Shave Club delivers everything to you. That means no more trips to the store or wandering the aisles hunting for razors, shampoo, toothpaste, or anything else you need to get ready. Or taking time out of your day to go shopping so you can play at being a cashier, scanning and bagging your own stuff. So right now, join Dollar Shave Club, and for just $5 with free shipping, you'll get their new starter set. It has the 6-blade executive razor plus trial sizes of the shave butter, body cleanser, and one wipe Charlie's. Then keep the blades coming for a few bucks more every month. Get yours at DollarShaveClub.com/martini. That's DollarShaveClub.com/martini. All right, Jim, let's move to our crazy martini now. And Ronan Farrow has done it again. He, of course, wrote the major expose not only on Harvey Weinstein's sexual predations last October. He's also the one who exposed the system that Harvey Weinstein employed to intimidate people into not reporting him. Now, President Trump is the focus of the latest column in The New Yorker from Mr. Farrow. And it basically confirms a lot of what we've pretty much assumed about Donald Trump for a long time. In this particular story, he focuses on Trump and a former Playboy playmate named Karen McDougal. Trump, in June of 2006, was out in Los Angeles at the Playboy Mansion filming an episode of The Apprentice. He met her. He immediately started hitting on her. He got her number. Soon they got together for a date. They, according to her, were intimate, and then he had this whole operation set up where he would pay for her secretly to travel and meet him places. And of course, there was the non-disclosure agreements that she could never actually talk about it. This was going on while he was married to Melania, and their son Baron had just been born. Plus, allegedly, at the same time as his relationship with the adult film performer that we might be hearing more about now that that non-disclosure agreement seems to be getting shredded as a result of the work of Michael Cohen. So, Jim, you've written about this in The Jolt today as well. I think there's a couple of things, obviously, worth pointing out here. You point out it's kind of curious as to why they are taken in by Trump's approach when it's kind of obvious what he's doing here. Jim, the bottom line here is we've just got a morally repugnant president. A lot of people aren't going to like to hear me say that, but the fact is that it's true. And this is something that we've known about Donald Trump for a very long time, which is why none of this, or at least most of this, doesn't come as anything of a surprise. And for a party and a conservative movement that has long portrayed itself as the defenders of traditional marriage and traditional values and has rightly condemned this kind of behavior in Bill Clinton and so many others over the years, you know, if you want to agree with the guy on policy, that's great. He has had some good policies. But to instinctively defend him on stuff like this, that's just wasting political capital and wasting our integrity.
Well put, Greg. I mean, look, I grew up in the northern New Jersey, you know, the New York City area in the 1980s when Trump was having this ugly divorce with Ivana Trump. The stories of Marla Maples. You know, I imagine if you were a New York Post headline writer, it was the best of times. This was a nasty, ugly, with all kinds of sordid details of affairs and womanizing and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So these stories about, you know, Donald Trump being a womanizer and being a lech and just, you know, pursuing basically anything that moved really have been around for a very long time. So I'm not going to say Ronan Farrow's story is not worthwhile. It's just simply not surprising. Now, I think what's interesting when you see Ronan Farrow playing a role in this, Ronan Farrow, obviously the guy who blew the lid off a good portion of the details of Harvey Weinstein. The New York Times had the original piece, and Farrow spoke to several actresses and kind of really fleshed out the story. You know, it's not a terribly dissimilar setup than Weinstein had. It appears most of the anecdotes or the stories in Farrow's piece are consensual. It's not quite as violent or implied violence or menace as described in the Harvey Weinstein story. Having said that, this is still a pretty unsavory arrangement. And I'm sure, you know, it does not make Melania Trump particularly happy to see these kinds of stories plastered all over the major news media. Having said that, I kind of have this feeling that, again, with Donald Trump having this really notorious reputation for a very long time, my cynical interpretation is that everybody involved knew exactly what they were getting into. The detail that stuck out to me, Greg, is the description of Trump. He meets the playmate. He, you know, asks for her number. They chat on the phone. They have a date. They do the horizontal mambo. He offers her money.
Yeah.
Apparently, he believed that was, you know, the right thing to do in that situation. She turned it down, and he told her she's very special. Now, look, I don't want to make fun of anybody else. We've all made our share of mistakes in life. But if Donald Trump tells you you're special in that circumstance and you believe him, then there's really nothing I can do for you. It's one of those things where I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that Donald Trump has said you are special to many, many women over the years. And, you know, again, it's a sordid, ugly arrangement that I think most people find morally bothersome, if not abhorrent, but everybody involved seems to be consenting and playing their role. And I think if we want to You know, I don't think we should have any illusions about Donald Trump. I think we should also recognize the electorate pretty much knew this going in when they voted for the guy. This is one of the reasons we had, you know, very intense primary fights. We, you know, there, by a lot of standards, Donald Trump is not a good man. It sounds like he is an absolute abysmal husband. But people aren't voting for a husband, I suppose. They're voting for a president of the United States. He's elected. He's going to be there for, you know, presumably for at least 3 more years and conceivably another 7 more years. You know, this is what it is, America. I think we should try to make better choices in the future. I'm not going to say that these sorts of marital problems are you know, always going to be a you know, instant deal breaker, or that some people can't have gone through tough times in their marriage. But man, oh man, look, we, you know, when you have a reputation of Donald Trump, I think everybody knows exactly what kind of human being he is. And yeah, what a wonderful note to end the week, huh, Greg?
That's true. We had such wonderful ethical options in the general election, don't you think?
Yeah. 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 Good call. Good.
All right, Jim, on that disgusting note, we'll call time for the week. We'll be back on President's Day. Have a good weekend.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone. And don't forget to visit dollarshaveclub.com/martini to get your $5 starter set.